The 2020 baseball season is unlike any we've ever seen before, for many obvious reasons. Not only at the major league level, but perhaps even more so for young players who are trying to get to the big leagues. We all love prospects. Who's the next great player who's going to arrive on the scene and play for our team?
As Commissioner Manfred said, the Detroit Tigers are on the clock as we are expecting Al Avila to make a historic decision. Who will be his number one overall pick?
But it's a whole different world for them this season, and for those whose job it is to tell the rest of us about them. Let's find out what we can. I'm Dan Shulman, and this is A Swing and a Belt.
Hi, I'm Keith Law, and welcome to episode 21 of The Keith Law Show. Going to do something a little bit different this week and answer a bunch of reader questions and, frankly, see how much of my skepticism about MLB's ability to pull this off will be justified.
Keith Law is a senior baseball writer for The Athletic. Prior to joining The Athletic, Keith wrote for ESPN.com and Baseball Prospectus and worked in the front office of the Toronto Blue Jays. Keith's specialty is prospects. Normally, I would imagine he's watching minor league games nonstop and constantly talking to people in the game about the next wave of great young players. But as we know, nothing is normal right now. Keith, how are you managing? How are you adapting to this crazy baseball season this year?
I wish I had a great answer to that. I wish I could even tell you I'm sleeping more, but that's actually not even true.
Well, I know you're juggling a lot of things, so I understand you're not sleeping very much. In a normal season, today is August 21st. What would Friday, August 21st be like for you in a normal season?
I would be, so at this point, all the summer amateur stuff would pretty much be done. So I would be poring over all of the minor league schedules near me. I live in Wilmington, Delaware. So there are, I think, 8 teams I can get to within a 2-hour drive, which is kind of my 47. There's only so much I'm willing to drive, especially at night at this point. But so I'd be poring over them, figuring I got about 2 weeks or so left of the regular minor league season, depending on the team, figuring out who might make the playoffs and just who do I still need to see? Who is nearby who I could conceivably get to just to see the last few guys I can before their seasons end? Because after this, it would be in a normal season, we'd have Arizona Fall League and that's it. To me, so much of it is just checking the boxes. Did I see this player? Did I see that player? Did I see... There are certain farm systems it's hard for me to get to geographically, but there are some I have no excuse, right? So I just try to make sure I see as many of those clubs and as many of the key prospects as I can over the course of the year. And when the end of the regular minor league season is staring you in the face, I get very stressed. It's like, oh my God, I need to get to 3 games a day. That's not possible. How do I do this? And just, eventually I calm down and I just pick the games that I can get to reasonably and try to see everybody I can.
So it's not just a case of watching whatever games are available online, getting on the phone. I'm sure those things happen too, but I didn't realize. So you're a real road warrior in the old school sense as well.
Yeah, I much, much prefer to evaluate players in person, to just go sit with the scouts or behind the scouts and evaluate players that way. And then I can go home. Typically, my preference is to not write the same night, go home, digest what I saw, but also by the next day then, whether it's through tools I have access to through The Athletic or just calling scouts or front office people, also try to get information on the analytics side, spin rates or exit velocities too. Hey, I saw XYZ. Is that accurate? Remember last year seeing DV Garcia as a prospect in the Yankee system, asking a Yankees executive, what's going on with his fastball? Guys are just swinging through it like he's throwing 100. And asking, is it a high spin rate? What do we know? Is it a spin axis? There's lots of different variables people look at. And he said, actually, no, it's quite average when we graded out on some of these TrackMan or StatCast style metrics, but hitters really don't see it. It's more of a deception thing. And that's fine. Like, I just need to know. I like to try to find evidence to back up what I think I've observed.
So I get asked, hey, do you do basketball and baseball games because those are the sports you love? Or is that just kind of where life took you? Are those the doors that opened up for you? So do you love covering prospects and following college baseball, high school baseball, minor league baseball, Arizona Fall League, because that's your passion? Or is that the door that opened up for you 15 or 20 years ago?
I have always preferred, since I started doing this, since I started with the Jays in 02, really, especially since I started with ESPN in 06, I've always preferred seeing prospects. Baseball was always my favorite sport, going back to when I was very, very little. My mom says I watched the 77, 78 World Series with her on the couch. My parents are from the Bronx, so I grew up a Yankee fan. And ever since I got into the game, though, I'd much prefer going to minor league games or amateur games at any level. I like seeing young players. I like the projection. I like the way we can combine what we see on the scouting side with now, especially now compared to what when I started, but how much data we have available, almost too much data available on players, to try to combine all of those to make better evaluations and better projections of what players can become. And because we're always wrong, it's the kind of thing you can never do perfectly. You can never do that well. Players change, their bodies change, their swings and deliveries change. So the fact that it can be a continuous learning thing keeps me from getting bored with it. I've kind of been doing the same thing for 14 years now, and I still like it, which is, I think, pretty remarkable, because you could definitely get bored with if it were the same thing every year.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about a player and projections and future, a Blue Jay prospect, and we'll talk about him a little bit later on. But big picture, this is such a tough year for everybody in every sense. But when we talk about prospects, the really good ones are probably at an alternate playing site, and the second level ones are probably just home right now, not doing anything. So, you know, from the information you've gathered, from the people you've talked to, how detrimental is this for young players? How much do you think this will set guys back, having a year where they're not playing competitive baseball?
So I've written multiple articles for The Athletic on or around this topic, from, you know, talking to player development guys before the season started, before this sort of weird season started. You know, what are you doing? What are you doing during the layoff? How are you keeping in touch with guys? And I just wrote something the other day on, so what are days like at the alternate sites? What are guys actually even doing there? No one will really say flat out, hey, this is terrible. This is actually is terrible, and we're setting all these guys back. No one wants to say that, and I understand that. Maybe they're privately thinking that. They don't want to tell me, and that's fine. But I think it's setting most guys back because, you know, prospects, especially now, we are so conscious of prospects' ages. So almost every prospect now is essentially losing a year, and every year is so critical because players get to the majors so much younger than they used to. They're productive younger than they used to be. And there's now this expectation, if you're a position player, you're not in the majors by 24, you're probably not that much of a prospect. Your career prospects are somewhat dimmed by that point. We have to throw all of that out the window. And also, I do think that losing for position players, it's probably 450 reps at the plate. For pitchers, it's 100 to 120 innings. What you're doing at the alternate site is not the same. And if you're just home and you're not facing any real competition, you could do strength and conditioning work. A lot of teams are doing mental skills development. Some teams are trying to do mechanical changes by having players, if they have access to certain types of equipment, they'll record their data, upload it to the team, and then the team player development people can give feedback and try to make changes. But none of it counts until players can actually do it in games. And even what they're doing at the alternate sites, these simulated games, they're better than nothing, but they're not real games. And I think that that probably sets 90% of players back to varying degrees.
Do you think if by some chance the United States is in a better shape with respect to the virus in October or December or whenever, do you think there will be anything in the late fall or the winter that there hasn't been in the past just to get these kids some reps before next season starts?
It's funny you ask that, because I had somebody tell me in one of the conversations I had for the article I wrote this week on what's going on at the alternate sites, he was talking about the possibility of multiple smaller fall leagues. Everyone seems to think we're going to get an Arizona fall league. Now, they may have it closed to fans. It would probably just be scouts and media, which would be great because scouts and media can't even go to the alternate sites right now. There seems to be some optimism that we'll have an Arizona fall league. And if we do, teams will probably send the best prospects they've ever sent because these guys haven't played. Typically, teams don't like to send their better pitchers to the fall league because those guys have already thrown their innings for the year. Well, that's obviously not the case this year. So we might see some really good pitching there. But there was also the possibility that we'd see it broken up into smaller fall leagues, Arizona, Florida, maybe even one or two others around the country, to try to limit exposure and mixing of players. And so maybe you have four teams here and four teams there. But in total, it's more prospects actually playing in the fall, which I'm obviously completely in favor of for multiple reasons, not the least of which is, hey, we got a lot of nice minor league ballparks around me. Why don't we do a Delaware Fall League?
Right. Yeah. I wonder, though, if people worry if it gets into November, December, and then if people worry, though, well, then they're not getting the typical rest. They're used to ramping up in February, pitching through the season, ramping down in the winter, taking a month or two off. You know, if they throw in December and then they throw in February, are people worried that it's different for them and that now you're risking injuries?
I think that's true. And I would add on top of that, too, this idea of doing them in cooler weather locations, you're up against the calendar as well. You cannot be playing baseball even in the sort of middle latitudes of the United States well into November. One, it's just too cold and nobody wants to be outside. But also I'd worry, are you risking injury that players are playing tight if they're not loose enough, their muscles aren't warm enough? And by the way, it's 40 degrees outside. So I do think that's got to happen. We'll know if we're not starting these things in late September in most parts of the country, it's probably not happening, or it's probably only going to happen in the deep south.
Right. Yeah. I don't like your chances of, well, maybe you'll have to drive, but I don't like your chances of anything near Delaware. I think you're heading south if you're going anywhere.
I agree.
Yeah. Let's talk about the 2021 draft. The 2020 draft, as we know, was only five rounds. And again, such a tough situation for so many kids who were hoping to get drafted. What do we know today about the 2021 draft?
So we still don't know the draft order. That's kind of the biggest question. Now, I do think that, and this would have to be negotiated like everything else between the commissioner's office and the players' union. But we do know that I think if we get a full season in, if we get the 60 games-ish in, they will just use reverse order of standings to determine the draft order. The biggest question has been, what would they do if, in the case that this season had to be cut short, would they just fall back to last year's standings, some kind of blend of last year and this year? We simply don't know. I will say it looks like next year's draft class is pretty strong. This year's turned out to be very, very good, particularly at the college level. But I also have a sneaking feeling, and this is based less on specific players and just more on how this year unfolded, we're going to see some players emerge next year, particularly at the junior college level, guys who maybe would have been drafted somewhere in the third to sixth rounds this year, who ended up not signing primarily because they were seen as too expensive. Teams might have liked them, but said, oh, well, that guy's not worth, you know, he's looking for second round money. We have him ranked as a fifth rounder. In this year, with an abbreviated draft, we don't have time to move money around and maybe take a guy like that. So I think there will end up, once we get into next year, assuming we have a regular spring season, we will see more talent emerge. So I'm more optimistic that next year's draft class will actually turn out to be very good as a consequence of the five round draft this year.
So some guys who were pretty good but didn't get drafted this year will deepen next year's pool, is what you're saying.
That's the right. That is the hope. I think there were plenty of those guys, and a lot of them are guys maybe we don't know. We couldn't name because their seasons were cut short. A lot of guys never started. The guys in, there was a first rounder, a high school kid in Pennsylvania here. He never actually pitched in a game this year. There were probably lots of guys like him who were pretty good, but needed to be seen this spring to be drafted and obviously never got the chance.
Do we know how many rounds next year's draft will be?
We don't. However, I will say that Major League Baseball, as an entity as a whole, and many front office people I've spoken to, have advocated for years to shorten the draft from 40 rounds. Even if we have a pretty regular spring next year, I would not be the least bit surprised if both sides agreed to just shorten the draft maybe to 20 rounds. There was a real push that the last proposal that Major League Baseball made to the union this year, that the union ended up rejecting for different reasons, I believe had 12 rounds. It was 10 or 12 rounds. To me, that's a pretty perfect number. The draft is fairly efficient at this point. We are not seeing very talented players typically fall to the 25th, 35th round like we used to, even 10 years ago. That can still happen, but it happens a lot less frequently. If you have a 10 to 15 round draft, we're probably getting all the right guys. Five rounds, however, is way too short. And I think looking at the draft this year and some of the players who weren't drafted, who were on my boards or MLB Pipelines boards or Baseball America, there were still some pretty talented players out there. And five rounds just clearly isn't enough.
So if it goes to 10 to 15, you're saying not just for next year, you could see that as a long-term change where it's reduced to that number of rounds?
Yes, I absolutely. I know there are plenty of people on the Major League Baseball side who want that. The union does not necessarily disagree, but because of free agent compensation in the form of draft picks, the union has a say on changes to the draft. Any major changes to the draft have to be collectively bargained. So whether that happens in 2021 or it just shows up in the next CBA, I would not be surprised at all for Major League Baseball to go to the union and say, we want a shorter draft. And the union would say, okay, that's great. We want this other concession. And it becomes part of the negotiation.
And with presumably fewer minor league teams going forward, which I talked about on another podcast with J.J. Cooper, if they go down to 120, you don't need as minor league players, but you still need a fair number of minor league players. So I would imagine if they went to 10 to 15 rounds, then the week after the draft or whatever, you'd see every major league team announce a fairly large number of free agent signings of undrafted kids that would have to be to fill the minor league teams, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. What you don't need, we'd lose all the short season teams between the Gulf Coast League and full season ball. And that, I think, knocks out a lot of the senior signs, the college seniors who'd signed for, you know, $1,000 to $5,000 late in the draft just to fill out rosters. But there would probably still be some decent undrafted free agents, as I think there were this year. There were no elite prospects in that group, but plenty of guys signed who'll at least have nice long minor league careers.
All right, let's talk 2020 draft. Maybe the biggest news out of the draft involved the Blue Jays. And seeing as how I'm a Blue Jays announcer and this podcast emanates from Canada, there are a fair number of Canadian Blue Jay fans who listen to this podcast. The surprise was as soon as the Orioles took Kesten Hierstad second, and all of a sudden Austin Martin's name started, well, he could be there at five.
With the fifth pick of the 2020 MLB draft, the Toronto Blue Jays select Austin Martin, a shortstop from Vanderbilt University.
Austin Martin, fifth overall to the Blue Jays, best pure hitter in this 2020 draft class, according to MLB.com.
And I know you and everybody had Martin ranked maybe as the second best. In some ways, some actually thought he could be the best player in the draft. But tell me, why did the Orioles take Hierstad second, and what kind of a player do you see Austin Martin becoming?
So I had Austin Martin first. I had him top of my board all along. That's no knock on Spencer Torkelson, who was the first overall pick. And who I know that my friends over in MLB Pipeline, they had him as the top prospect in the draft. Spencer Torkelson's a great prospect. I preferred Austin Martin as a prospect because he's going to play a skill position. He's a better athlete than Torkelson. Torkelson is a first baseman who might play left field. Austin Martin is primarily a third baseman. He's played center. He has played a little bit of shortstop. I believe the Blue Jays are going to try him at shortstop. There is no chance in my mind that Martin doesn't end up somewhere at one of the skill positions of third, second, short, center field. He's too fast. He's too athletic. And when I saw him at third base as a sophomore at Vanderbilt, I thought he had a chance to be a gold glove caliber defender over there. He's also got incredible bat speed. He makes very consistent hard contact. He's very hard to strike out. He's got pretty good plate discipline. I think the only big question on him has been what kind of power he's going to ultimately produce. I think, one, there's more than enough power to make him a star in the big leagues, but he does all of the other things you would potentially look for in a player. I don't know exactly why the Orioles chose Hierstad over Martin in baseball terms. I know there was a financial motivation, which is that Martin was not taking less than slot at pick two. Hierstad, I believe, did take a decent haircut at pick two, which allowed the Orioles to go over slot for high school players, high school pitchers in rounds four and five. So it was more of a whole draft strategy saying, we'll take a slightly less player at pick two if it gets us a better draft class as a whole. That is a philosophy. I happen to not agree with it. I think when you pick first, second, third, you just take the best player and don't really question it.
If somebody were to ask you, as I'm about to, what do you think the timeline would be for, given that there's no minor league baseball this year, when do you think Austin Martin could arrive in the major leagues? Is there a way for you to make an educated guess at that?
Sure. I mean, I think let's assume that we have a typical minor league season in 2021, regardless with or without fans, whatever. We get a full season of games next year. I think that puts Martin on pace to debut in the majors in June of 2022. Now, if he'd played a real summer this year, I would have said it wasn't out of the question that he could debut in September of 2021, but the lack of repetitions plus the fact that we aren't really sure what position he's going to end up playing makes me want to push that back a little bit.
All right, let's talk Vladimir Guerrero. Tell me what you saw and heard and gathered about him on his way up through the minor leagues when he was, by consensus, the best hitting prospect in minor league baseball. And tell me what you're seeing now.
Believe it or not, I'm not the pessimist. Obviously, there are a lot of people very down on Vlad. He's been pretty unproductive this year. There's not power. He's below replacement level as a player as a whole. What I saw of him coming up was a guy with ridiculous plate coverage, crazy bat speed, huge power, basically checked every box you'd be looking for in an offensive player. I thought he was going to be a DH, even when he was 18 or 19. I think he was 19 by the time I first actually saw him live. I said, He's heavy. That body's going the wrong direction. He is absolutely not going to be able to play third. And if I'm projecting out 4 or 5 years, I think he ends up a DH. What I have seen from him this year, there are two things that stand out. One, I think everyone's aware, he's just hitting the ball on the ground way too much. And some of that is swing related. I don't think it is so much decisions at the plate. I think it is more about his bat path. That can be fixed. Now, my understanding is that Vlad is kind of more of an instinctive hitter, and it's not that he's a very intelligent hitter, but he is less of a mechanical side. This is not somebody you get with in the cage, maybe, and start working on things like hand position. The thing that concerns me a little more is just he has gotten heavier. His body just keeps heading in the wrong direction. And one, obviously, I think that continues to fulfill my prophecy that he's going to end up at DH. But I think it's also just posing problems for him to get the bat through the zone. And get it's almost like he has to get around himself. And it reminds me a little bit of a player who was briefly in the Blue Jays system in Brett Wallace. Now, Wallace was different. It was actually a different body type. Brett Wallace was a big kid, but it was less about excess weight and just more about his frame. If Vlad were to drop some of that weight, I mean, I think it's really affecting him in a baseball sense. This is not an aesthetic judgment. It is more that I think it is hard for him. He's not turning the way he used to be. I think there are certain pitches, especially middle in, that it's harder for him to get the bat around. And it's just the excess weight might be getting in his way. Maybe that's not the solution. But it also probably just extends his baseball career if he gets himself into somewhat better conditioning. So I'm sure the Blue Jays are aware of this, that their emphasis for him the rest of this year and even into the offseason is, Vlad, we got to get you in better shape because it's going to make you a better baseball player. It'll keep you healthy. Hopefully it'll extend your career.
Yeah, I think it was an emphasis going into last season. And I think he showed up in Dunedin in February in better shape, but he kind of let it get away from him. He's admitted as much during the lockdown. It's interesting you talk about bat path, because has that changed since you saw him or first started hearing about him in the minors? Because he was getting the ball in the air in the minors, but now he's hitting it on the ground. Is it superior pitching, or do you think there's something mechanically in his swing that has changed since he's gotten to the major leagues?
I will say I haven't noticed. But also, I have not gotten to see him in person this year where I'd see that side view and get the slow motion video I'd want to see of his swing. Like in a typical season, right? I could just, the Blue Jays often come to Philly, or I'd go down to Baltimore and just sit on the first base side and just watch his swing and get, you know, maybe do it a couple days and get 12 swings from him and compare to video I have in the past and then be able to compare and contrast. From the TV angle, which is not great, I haven't really noticed that. I have a feeling it's a little bit better pitching, and it's a little bit some of his pitch selection, which again, he doesn't swing and miss a lot. He can kind of hit everything. Maybe that's a little bit to his detriment. I admit I'm kind of spitballing a little bit here, but I wonder if this is, hey, lad, there are pitches you can actually hit, but maybe you should be laying off of to try to get a better pitch, one that maybe is a little bit more out over the plate or just lets you get your arms extended a little more so you can put the ball in the air. But without the side angle, I admit I'm just guessing.
Yep, fair enough. Last thing, the Blue Jays see the Rays all the time, play in the same division. The Rays just are so good and so competitive and so adaptable given the small payroll that they have. And they have arguably the best prospect in the minors right now. So tell me what baseball fans are going to see when Wander Franco gets to the big leagues.
Yeah, I'm a huge Wander Franco fan. Even though he's not big, or he's not a Fernando Tatis Jr. type prospect where it's just everything's electric all over the place. But Franco is such an advanced hitter. He hits like a 25-year-old veteran. He has crazy bat speed, but just his understanding of the strike zone, of his strike zone, and of what pitches he should be trying to get to, what pitches he could potentially be able to drive, is really exceptional. It was exceptional at 18 the first time I saw him in short season ball. And there's a video where I tweeted it, and it was very popular, of him just exploding on a ball to hit it out to center field. And I think you could hear at the very end of the video me just starting to laugh because of how fast he got his hands started. It's like, you don't see that very often. I've been doing this a while. I haven't seen a lot of players who could do that. The question on him is going to be, where does he end up defensively? He's a good shortstop. He's not an elite shortstop. And because he's not super fast, I wonder if just as his body ages and he just gets a little slower, as we all do, does he end up at second base? And then he's probably still a superstar because of his bat. He's doing it at second instead of shortstop. And that's just a not insignificant difference, but I bring it up because I think it's kind of the only question. I think he's going to hit and get on base, be an impact hitter, pretty much right away. He's kind of like Mike Trout in the sense that he was already ready at an exceptionally young age.
Another great player coming for the Rays. Keith, this has been fun. I think everybody loves today, but I think everybody loves tomorrow just as much. and you focus on the tomorrow for baseball, and this has been very enjoyable. Thank you for doing this, and I really appreciate it. And I hope whether it's car, plane, Delaware, Florida, that you get to get back to doing what you love and going to see ball players in person before long.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure, and I am wearing my mask every day in the hopes that I can get us to some kind of baseball fall league.
Good for you. Do your part. Keith loves prospects, and he is an outstanding evaluator of them. If you like knowing who's next, he's a great read on The Athletic. And hopefully by this fall or next spring at the latest, he'll be able to get back to doing what he does so we can all enjoy his work. That'll do it for this episode of A Swing and a Belt, produced as always by Christian Ryan. I want to thank you for listening. I'm Dan Shulman, and we'll see you again next time.